Hello everyone, welcome back to the show. And back to the show today, we've got Jane Pooley. How you going, Jane?
Good, thank you, Peter. How are you?
Good. We had an awesome response from the last show. What you said about a lot of things resonated with a lot of people. They were very interested, and it touched a lot of people with how you described the craft, some of the beings, how some of the interactions have been. Before we go any further, because today it would be cool to go into, what happens life after death, ghosts, these other things that you're talking about on Facebook, which was getting a response. Do you want to just give a quick overview of who you are? And if for a lot of the viewers and listeners, if they don't know Jane Pooley, just go back about two or three shows, I think, and we go in depth in that show. So it's really worth watching. But just a quick overview if you can.
Okay, so my name is Jane Pooley, and I'm a registered nurse and a mother and a grandmother. I'm 54, and I have come out as a lifetime abductee with quite clear memories and hybrid children in space whom I've physically met. But I've also had a near-death experience, and I've been psychic all my life too, so I have plenty of ghost stories. I just want to say thank you as well. The private messages that I was sent in response to last week's show were absolutely mind-blowing. I'm so grateful. I was a little nervous about saying something I thought was so controversial on air, but the support and the response has been amazing. So you're right, it does seem to have resonated with a lot of people.
It has, and this is why I do what I do. It helps people, and there was a time, and I'm sure you in your early years, you didn't have people you could really talk to or just, network with, and now we can these days. So this is where, like I said to I've said to a lot of people, we've just got to support each other. We're not all going to resonate on everything, but I want everyone to get all their information out because this is where it helps people. That's the main thing here, which it does. So I'm glad that you've got a lot of responses, and this, again, that's why I do what I do, and I'm sure that's why you've come out as well, which takes a lot of guts, like I've said. So thank you for coming out.
You are doing a great job exposing this sort of information. But thank you for saying that because it is hard to come out. Just not fear of what's happened, that everything, all the experiences I've had have been extremely positive. And anything negative I've coped with quite well. But just fear of judgment, basically. It's pretty controversial to say I've been on a spaceship and I've got hybrid children. But I have discovered, whilst I'm here to help others, what I've discovered is that there are so many others with almost identical stories. Now, our spiritual beliefs are individual and we're all entitled to those, but our physical and observational experiences with aliens match. There are so many women I've met through this that have almost identical experiences. And believe me, it helps me to know that, so hopefully it helps others to hear me find the courage to come out.
Well, a large majority of my experiences have been positive too, but you still question your sanity once in a blue moon because it's just so far out there and people are saying no. And it's like, hang on, you in charge of my reality, are you? And this is where you end up going to the other side for a few seconds and flipping and flopping, and people don't get that. So it is good validation, and it is good reassurance for, just for the soul when you have things happen like this, just to make you, go, I'm not nuts, and
That's
it
right.
is helping people, definitely. Well, let's go into some of the things that you spoke of your near-death experience. Can you go into that?
Yeah, sure. It was a number of years ago, and I was having chemotherapy in hospital, so it's documented and recorded that I was in cardiac arrest. I'll try not to use too many medical terms, being a nurse. From as near as I could gather, I, of course, had no concept of time because I wasn't here. And my ex-husband reckoned he'd been asleep for about 15 minutes, but the nurse said it was about 2 hours. So, it's all in the medical notes. However, what happened for me was I actually called out and I said, Jesus, save me. I can't cope with this anymore. I don't want to die, but I can't. I really was very, very ill. And then I did, basically. I had a bad reaction to the medication. So, there's medical reasons why I rested. And then I straight away went whoosh through a tunnel. This story is a little beyond the light at the end of the tunnel. It was like when you're a child and you do gross things like suck up red cordial and put your finger on the top of the straw and then let it go in water and then the red disperses into the water. That's how I felt. So it was still me whooshing through the tunnel into the light. And in the light, I was still me, but I felt part of everything there. So I immediately realized that there was no time, no distance, no space. And God said to me, do you want to stay or do you want to go back? So that blew my mind first. Do men I have a choice? Well, I felt completely well there. And so I wanted to go back for my children and my then husband. God said, your husband will not be there when you get back. And I thought, well, he was when I left, but okay. So then he showed me heaven. So I went, having said no time, distance or space, flying about 3 foot off the ground, because I have to give you some sort of vision in your head, over fields of magnificent flowers that were like multiple roses in one, but no thorns. And the colours were magnificent. Now, the best I can give you on that is if you put a torch through a leaf, of course, it's much brighter green. So all the colours were infused with this beautiful light. And I could feel the sun on my skin, even though I didn't have any skin. So the point being, I felt exactly like me, only Will. So then I went flying to the crest of a hill, and I could hear a sound that could only be angels. It was music or talking, but it was a beautiful sound. I can't, there's nothing on earth as beautiful as it. I knew if I went over that hill, I couldn't come back. I just knew things instinctively. So after I'd seen all this, I was suddenly back in my body, and the nurse was trying to give me an injection. When you've been dead for some time, it doesn't work. There's no circulation to, and there's a funny side, to inject it. She was a young nurse, and it freaked her out. She realised that not only was I dead, but I was cold and beginning rigor mortis, so it must have been a while. And then she didn't have to resuscitate me. Suddenly I was back in my body. I was aware of all that going on around me because I'd been back in the room. And witnesses said, no, you weren't even breathing, where I thought I was answering her when she was calling out. So then I just took this giant breath in, and suddenly I was back in my body. And I can only tell you, it was a massive migraine. And the nurse laughed, and so did the morning staff, because they said, if you've only got a headache, you should be brain dead after all that time. So I didn't have a CAT scan, no brain damage.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, because as a nurse, that is scientifically impossible, so I can only call it a miracle.
Now, with the sound that you heard... Sorry, go on, please.
I believe I went into heaven. Yep. And as a nurse, I've heard many people tell me they're in a light tunnel, or they're floating on the ceiling, or they see people that have passed over before them. But I had never heard this story. So I knew it was true. I knew where I'd been. There was no doubt whatsoever. But I kept it to myself for a couple of days. And then I told a friend who was a priest. And he said that he has only heard that story once before, and it was an old nun that was dying. Well, since then, I've heard number of people, but it's not as if it was already in my subconscious. That's my point.
Yeah, no, definitely. Excuse me, people have got a bit of a cold at the moment, but have you ever heard of the story of Dr. Eben Alexander?
No, tell me. No,
well, he had a near-death experience, and what the skeptics say is the part of the brain that plays this out, he proved medically that it was dead. So that could not be the case when he had this near-death experience, if I'm getting this right. Then he came back to body after, I think it may have even been hours or a day or so. I can't remember the exact details. But when he came back, he was basically able to tell everyone what was going on in that area, but it was documented. So the part that the skeptics said that this all plays out in this part of the brain, he could prove that it couldn't have been, and that the skeptics don't know what they're talking about, because he went through this. Now, he was very skeptical himself before any of this happened, and he talked about basically going into a realm where everything was almost like murky and dark and sort of reptilian type faces. Not, he doesn't know, didn't go into reptilians or anything like that, but then he said he came out of it. Then he came out of this realm, and he was guided around by this being, which I think later he found out to be his sister that passed away years earlier. And he went to this place where there was this sound in the background, almost like an om. and I won't go too much into it, but anybody watching, it's my father, skeptic, he's seen stuff now with me, of course, but he was a cop for 38 years, and we got him this book, and he was blown away by it.
Emergency cops really click. Yeah, we tell the same stories.
Yeah, so in terms of that, any skeptic reading this, I'd say it would make a skeptic think. And I think later on David Icke spoke to him about some of the lower realms that he experienced, but he wasn't there for too long. It was almost like he had to experience that to get out of it. And I think there was some light tunnels and stuff like that, but I just didn't know if you had heard of this, but when you heard...
Sorry.
Yeah. With the sound, was it like a repeating loop of a group of tones, or do you even think it had anything to do with the vibration, what you heard in that realm?
No, I hear you, and I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, you're talking about,
I think the temporal lobe sort of emitting all sorts of sensors and colours and things. Look, what I saw and
heard... I was even thinking like a vibration thing, that it might have been just where you were at the plane of bliss or God, wherever...
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I think call it whatever you want. I call it, in my experience, heaven, hell, and stuck in between.
Yeah.
Which is not perfect. There might even be other places, but there's certainly good and bad. I have heard patients come back and tell horrific, terrifying stories that change their lives of seeing the bad side. And I'm sure that people just leave their body and become ghosts and get stuck right there sometimes. I've seen that nursing. The sound was so beautiful. This is why I know I was in heaven. There is nothing as beautiful on earth as I experienced there. There are no words to describe it because we have nothing that matches. But I also would like to say that I said to God, he said to me, I want you to tell people. And I just went, as if anybody's going to believe me. And he said, give me some proof in scientific terms. And he gave me some. He told me that a particular relative of mine wasn't, in fact, related to me, and to check the DNA, and that was true. So I got my proof, and I also came back with a 200-page exercise book full of prophecies that I timed and dated and wrote down. And I said to you, I did this in the last interview too, gave it to someone else, and every one of those prophecies has come true. So I had to have been in the good place, and it had to be God, because there's your proof.
Is there any of those prophecies left to be played out yet or anything, or are they basically it's all played out? Because how many years ago was this?
I was 33, so I'm now 54.
Yeah. So pretty much all's played out in those prophecies to prove that what you're getting was correct information?
Yes, 100% correct. And I've then been able to go back to long-term friends and said, is this what I said? This is what I told you would happen. And it did happen exactly as I'd predicted it. My granddaughter, for instance, has a particular set of circumstances around her life, and I saw all of that and exactly what she looked like then, and my kids were only little. So I wasn't old enough to be a grandmother, and her father was about 8, I think. So, yes, all but two have played out exactly accurately, and I could back that up. I've said many times, if I was in a high court with a judge and asked to prove these things, nobody can prove they saw heaven, but I can prove I was dead, and I can prove that the predictions came true, and I had some sort of evidence.
Yeah. So, with this experience, how did you experience God? Was it through telepathy and the consciousness of knowing you're in heaven, seeing what you saw?
Yeah, it was definitely... Yes, it was telepathy. It wasn't a voice. It wasn't a man. God was the light everywhere. I called out to Jesus before I went, but I didn't see Jesus in heaven. I saw the light. And it was also the air was so clean that when I tell this story and I think about, I just look at the air here, the air to me looks really dirty. So it was perfect in every way and nothing comparable here.
Yeah.
So it was somewhere that I could spend eternity. Plus, being no time, the thing that worried me about dying was leaving my kids behind particularly. What I discovered there was that there was no time, so in a blink of an eye, they'd be there. I didn't get to feel anything negative in heaven. So, sure, I don't want to go, but, you know, I would have been fine. I had to come back for them. It was just magnificent in every possible way.
How did this change you when you came back? Because you were obviously already having experiences as well.
Well, you're right. And I've had psychic experiences since I was a child. However, when I came back, I was far more psychic. Instead of just being psychic for me, I could do it for someone else, clearly. I've seen an angel that predicted my son's brain tumour and saved his life. You know, I can't tell all personal details on here, but I can name relatives. I can do haunted houses and tell you their stories and tell you where documents are kept. Extremely psychic after that, just psychic before that. Also, I do astral travel. If you ask me if I can do it at will, no, I can't. But often when I'm asleep, I just leave my body. It's as if I'm not as attached. Now, one particular night, I went to a married couple, a friend of mine's room, and I was standing in their room in the middle of the night, just in my body, you know, just in my astral body, my spirit. And the next day I got a phone call from him saying, I saw you in the bedroom last night. And I said, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it. And but he'd seen me. He was psychic. So not only was I aware that I was there, the psychic one in the couple had seen me.
As well.
Yeah. So, and I've been to lots of different places that check out later. So, yeah, I can now astral travel.
With the ghost side of things, what's your take on that with the ghosts? When you know what's happening there?
My way of putting it, I think that everybody has a soul or a spirit or an energy or an aura or a whatever you want to call it. Doesn't matter. Same thing, different word. And if you believe there's a heaven and a God, you're going to, and you've been good, you're going to go there. If you don't, you're either going to go to hell or get stuck. And I don't think that God wants anyone to go to hell. So I think people that have no beliefs or perhaps didn't leave a great life but weren't that bad just get stuck. Or sometimes there's a reason. For example, somebody might die but hang around for, well, this is a true story, 5 years waiting for someone else to die, to take them with them or to save their life by giving them information that they needed.
So it's a multi-layered situation, isn't it?
Yeah, so I don't know the reason. I'm not God. I've said that many times, but it happens. So ghosts exist, absolutely. And the person, because I've astral travelled, I know that I feel exactly as the same as me when I'm out of my body. For example, one night, this is a funny one, I woke up needing to do a wee, and I got up and went to the bathroom and looked in the mirror and I couldn't see myself. And I realised I'd forgotten my body. And the second I realised I was out of my body and was giggling, I was back in my body. So I then had to walk to the bathroom. So I obviously wasn't as connected, but I thought it was pretty funny. So I know how it feels to be a ghost, the same as when you're alive, only everybody else can't see or hear you. So quite often people are stuck in the place they died or stuck around people they love. It's true that I've done a few agency shifts in old psych hospitals and they're always haunted. So some psychiatric patients, not all, of course, as physical illnesses, but some might have had bad spirits around them and that's why they were admitted. And when they die, they stay there and so do those bad spirits that they kept with them. So that's a kind of hell, I guess, but it's certainly not a nice place to be. And they tell me stories of great pain and anguish and how lonely they are, and they mightn't have been angry when they died, but now they're angry because no one can hear them, and suddenly they find a psychic that can help them. And since I've been in heaven, I now find that I can pray for them, and a light tunnel opens, and they go off to heaven. But I also figure that I'm only asked to help the ones that God wants to head off. I mean, I don't make those decisions. I just ask. So I seem to have a gift of helping them leave this earthly plane.
So it's just, again, a case-by-case scenario on, you know, and how it plays out. So you're obviously able to, if there's like a situation where they're willing to and you're allowed to, you can help them move on.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of times. And then I'll get, like I've done a lot of big Sydney buildings. Again, there's legalities. I can't say names and places, yeah. But I've cleared them. And they've come back to me and said, for the first time in years, there is no ghostly activity here. The place feels different. There are a number of big city buildings where my story has, I then write the story and give it to them and they've put it in the history of their building. That's become part of it, their archive. I can tell you about the Hydro Majestic because the ghost was my relative, so I figure I've got a few more rights there.
Yeah.
Her name was Grace Tyrrell. Grace was dead before my mother was born, and she was a ghost that I've seen since my child, since babyhood. But a relative that wasn't in touch with the family got in, back in touch with the family just after my near-death experience and came up with some photos. And I said, well, that's Grace and that's Henry and blah, blah, blah. And this great-uncle said, you can't know. They were dead before your mother was born. I said, sorry, they've been following me all my life. So I knew exactly what they looked like, exactly what their names were. And then this relative who used to be a police commissioner, so somebody reputable, said, yeah, well, you've got it right. That's who they are. So Grace haunted me, but nicely, all my life. She would often help me, give me information, say, go that way, or don't do this, or do that, or you're about to meet somebody, take note. So she was, I guess, a bit of a guardian angel or a guide. I don't really care what words you use. It's all the same thing, really, different language.
Yeah.
And I kept having this repeated dream about her, about the end of her life, about her walking up a particular spot of grassy spot of land and a building she was staying in and about her falling off the edge of the cliff. Now, the family story was that she committed suicide, and the Hydro Majestic was originally a health farm, as in a modern, you know, like a hippie retreat for rich people in those days. And that's all I knew. But Grace said I did not commit suicide, and she haunted me all my life. So eventually I went, okay, I'll do what you want. I didn't know it was a Hydro Majestic. I had no idea where it was. So I took a friend with me for a witness, because I always think that's a good idea. And the friend drove, and I just said, go here, go there, blah, blah, blah. And we eventually turned up at the Hydro. And we walked into the place, and I said, I need to meet a man called Jack Cowell. I won't say the second half of his name. That's all I could hear anyway from Grace. And I asked the waitress in the coffee shop, and she said, oh, here's the he's not there anymore. The HR manager, and he's doing the history of the building. His office is over there. So I went to his office and he said, I've been waiting for you, Jane. I never met the man in my life. So he gave me and my friend a really great tour, you know, in the under the building, around the back, places that the public can't go before they renovated it. So places that were being pulled down. And I gave him... Sorry about that noise, that's my cat. The entire history of the building. And he said, you have no idea how accurate you are. I've been researching it. I said, well, look, let's go over to that building over there, and in the walls you will find documents that prove all these things that I'm saying. And he said, oh, we found documents in the wall of that building over there. I said, that building was burnt down, and there were bodies there, buried there, that were killed from ECT. And he said, yeah, that well, it went on to be investigated, and yes, that's the case. Plus, they had old surgical instruments. So it turned out, and then I was seeing what I could only describe to him as D&C surgical tools. Don't worry. And I said, they're like tiny tools. And he said, yeah, it was an abortion clinic. So I was telling him what I was seeing, but not knowing what I was seeing. So it turns out poor Grace Tyrrell had been engaged to a man and went off to war and died. And she was pregnant. So she had an abortion. Now, Grace would know I don't do abortion. So she hadn't told me that. Well, I'm not here to judge her. I was here to help her, but that's why she hadn't told me. She knew how I felt about it. Anyway, so I then, in with these two men as a witness, walked around the building, up a grassy path, found where an original cottage had been that she'd stayed in, walked through the bush, found the place that she'd gone, and relived her death. And what happened was she'd had lace-up shoes and long dresses in those days, and she had simply gone to the bush to do a what we call a bush wee and tripped on a shoelace and fell over the edge, and she was there for 3 days and then finally she was dead. And I felt every injury of hers. I knew where they all were.
What a way to go.
Yeah, but the point is she did not commit suicide.
Yeah.
And she really wanted that known. So, and after that, I saw the door to heaven open, so like a light tunnel, like a portal, if you will, but much more beautiful than that. And out of it stepped her brother and her father. My great-great-grandfather was with me on this side, and Grace is confused. And I said, just go with them. You trust us? Go with them. And she stepped into heaven, and they all went off together, and the door closed, and I'm not haunted anymore.
So that's something to live with for quite some time, along with your alien experiences too.
Never stop.
Never stop.
No.
How does that...
Everyone.
What's that, Dale? Sorry?
Everyone knows I'm psychic. Everyone knows I'm psychic. Because I've... Even doubters, it's just... I tell them what's going to happen and it does. I ring up a girlfriend and say, you're pregnant. This is a girlfriend. She said, no, I'm not. Next week she rings me and says, guess what?
So, exactly, you know, what happened.
Yeah. So no human being can be 100% right. So it has to come from the spirit world telling me.
Yeah.
I'm just the messenger. Now, on that note, since I've come back from heaven, I've been able to do healings. I don't advertise that.
Yeah.
Now I am. Because I don't think I can heal everybody. If I could, being a nurse would be a different job, wouldn't it? But some people come to me and I just get the message to heal them. A particular man in a Sydney hospital, doesn't matter which one, ICU. He was only 52 and he had a young child, which is quite old to have a young child. And he had a heart attack and he went into cardiac arrest. And he was my patient. So I started it, but the whole team comes and tries to resuscitate him. I went on and on, no one could, decided he was brain dead, was called by the doctor as, forget it, can't do it. Everyone left because it was my patient, I had to clean up the mess. I put my hand over his chest, just like that, and I prayed. But I didn't know anybody was watching. Then suddenly the man came back to life. Not kidding. He'd had fixed dilated pupils, meaning brain dead, forget it. But he came back to life. So the team rushed over and put him on a respirator and... You know, there he was, alive. Then the woman in the bed opposite, an old woman, called me over and said, I saw what you did. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, caught. And she said, I saw white light come out from under your hand. And the whole time you did it, there was a ball of light outside the window of the hospital hanging over the car park. Call it an orb, call it an angel, call it a spaceship, don't care. It happened. We all work for the same man upstairs. So... You know, it does all tie in at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So then 3 days later, I did another, it was an agency shift, in the same hospital on a ward, and I had this same man as my patient, and I walked in, and he was walking around the room fine, and I just couldn't believe my eyes. He had no brain damage. So not me, God, but through me, and I couldn't do this before I'd been in heaven.
And so I'd been obviously... abilities and things, and you're used as a vehicle for this to come through.
Yeah. And that's important. Nobody should think they're God or the highest power or whatever you want to call him. I'm really big on using different words for the same thing. We're still saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Different languages. Nobody is capable of that. No human being can bring somebody back to life when they're that dead. So it's through me, not by me. I also astral traveled once. And it was witnessed. I was asleep and I was praying for this boy who I knew was dying of meningitis, this two-year-old baby in ICU, and again, a big Sydney place. And it was my girlfriend that had told me about it. She was a doctor there. So unbeknownst to me, in my sleep, I astral traveled, stood beside the bed, and my girlfriend, the doctor, said, I saw you. That boy lived. Immediately started breathing again. You know, it can't be a human being, can it?
Yeah. So there's been multiple cases of where this has happened, there's been a healing done through you and
absolutely
they've been sweet.
So on, and I have written ghost stories and healing stories. I might publish those one day, but we'll deal with the alien ones first. But all of my long-term friends know these stories.
Going into the alien side of things, is there anything you didn't cover last show that you'd like to go into a bit more with that?
Well, I think we should bring up reincarnation because other people do.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
And I think it's important to confront these issues. I personally don't believe in reincarnation. I did say that my interpretation of the experiences that I'm sure you've had and I have too are my ancestors' memories stamped on my DNA. And I use the example of Grace Tyrrell because I had her memories that all panned out when we could find photographs and documents that told me where she lived. So all my life, I could have been interpreted as Grace Tyrrell reincarnated. No, Grace Tyrrell was a ghost that needed my help. She had to wait for a psychic. She was psychic. She had to wait for a psychic great-great-great niece to be born to release her. So my experience of Grace is I was never Grace, but she was around me. And I could remember her memories. I could see through her eyes. I could see, feel her feelings. And I understand people interpreting that. And if your religious beliefs, I'm not here to change them. If your religious beliefs include reincarnation, that's not up to me. But I'm here to tell the truth as I've experienced it, and I won't deviate from that.
So what about with people that have memory of being on other planets and in other lives, and also cases such as there's so many stories out there with little kids that are living in another country and they say, my past life was in this country, there's no epigenetic connection, they can tell the father, the mother, objects in the house, where things were, what they used to do on certain Sundays. What would you say these other possible reasons for it?
Yep, other possible reasons. Everything I've said so far in my first-hand experience, I believe to be 100% true. Right now, this is theory, and that's important.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nor am I a guru. But again, in my experience with Grace and other relatives, that little boy, and I know the case you're talking about, was psychic, I think. And he, the dead person, was trying to get messages through to the live people to say where he lived. They also don't always know they're dead. So they're explaining it, their life as they're living it, and they're seeing it as it was when they were alive. So that's one thing, psychic kid, rather than, or it could have been, it can
Well, I've seen multiple cases. I've seen probably about 10 different cases.
I've done that too. Homicide police, I have helped with a homicide and told them every detail of a murder, the name and the face of the murderer, blood splatter details. And I was pointed out to the judge in this case, and that's another one I could prove. So it could have been said that I was reincarnated. Nope, it was a ghost who needed help for me. Now, the alien one, though, I think I've probably got grey DNA in me. We've established that. And I think it goes back multiple generations. I think most of us who are interested in this field, yourself included, probably have some sort of alien DNA in us. I think God made all of us, but I think the aliens have played with our DNA a bit along the way, you know, like the hybrid children. So that means we have, Graham is my ancestor. So I could, for example, using myself just as an example, have Graham's memories in me because I have his DNA in me. And so you might have another alien's memories in you, and it's stamped. We don't know much about DNA. We only discovered it in yours and my lifetime, on Earth, I mean. But they've known about it on other planets for a long time. And there's a lot more to it than we know. It's not just your eye colour. It's not just your personality. It's not just, I don't know, your hair colour, your body shape, your height. It's memories. It's things that you're good at, things that you're not. You know, there have been cases of kids coming back already speaking other languages or already playing the piano. But their ancestors may have done those things and they still remember if they're particularly good at it. So that's how I see it. I think aliens, I keep saying they're just people on other planets, like people on other in other countries. And so what's the difference? I mean, we're one planet out of however many billions are out there. I don't think it's hundreds or thousands, I think it's billions.
Yeah.
And many of them have life on them. So it's going to be a lot of aliens out there.
Oh, definitely. Also, I think so. I'll go on, sorry.
Aliens. There's also dead people, ghosts. There's also angels that were never in a body that came from heaven. There's also what some people call demons or fallen angels, which are angels that were naughty. God sent off the other way. There are so many different versions of spirit, for want of another word, that they can't all be blended in together. And I do find through talking to people that a lot of people mix these things all up and think they're all one and think maybe an alien's an angel. Well, maybe they are. You know, I don't know. I only know what I see. Or maybe every reptilian's a demon. I don't think so. I think demons exist. I also think reptilians exist. Or maybe a whole race is bad. Now, that's like saying you and I are Australian. All Australians are bad.
Yeah.
Well, they're not, are they? You and I are good, and I know plenty of good people, but there are criminals out there too. So all of anything isn't good or bad because they're a race of people who look different according to their environment. We know that blue eyes and fair skin and blonde hair evolved in cold places where they didn't see much sun. And we know that. And dark skin and dark hair and dark eyes. I probably have ancestors that lived in the sun. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, my ancestors are Anglo-Saxon, but there's grey, there's probably other things in there. So we do adapt to our environment. We know that if somebody lived through, for example, the potato famine in Ireland, and they were really tiny of stature because they were so malnourished all their life, their children, medicine knows this, their children, grandchildren would be very small, even if they fed a lot of food, because they took that genetic memory with them. So we know a certain amount of that. What I'm saying is not entirely theory. It's based on scientific fact. But there's a lot more that we don't know. And if all of those things are stamped on our DNA, why can't memories be too?
Well, that's what's being looked at now with epigenetics. So,
But I've been saying that for a long time. And I think not only I, obviously other people are too, but I subscribe to that theory because it makes sense to me. But I am not here to tell you what to believe. You've just asked me what I believe.
So how's this played out for yourself? Like, I was brought up not even really a Christian. My dad was Church of England. I don't think my mum was connected to anything. And I do believe in God and Yeshua, Jesus, you know, and a lot of the saints and sages, and not just of Christianity, but, you know, in, you know, Muslim and Hindu and you know, it's all interconnected. You've got Gabriel in both Bibles. You've got a lot of the same figures in both religions. Yeah. Well, this is where it's all interconnected. Has it helped evolve you down a different path and have even more faith in your religion to even see some of the manipulation that's been put in there? Like, we look at the King James Bible, for example, and it was the authorized version. So the King James Bible, when we look at it now, it has been authorized to have been changed in certain areas. And this is where we've sort of got to go back. And I think a lot of the scripts have been manipulated by whoever's in power at the time, whether it was Rome or, you know, the Vatican, whoever. But obviously it strengthened your faith, and you've experienced some of these beings like myself. So how's that affected you and your belief system?
Yeah, enormously. I must say, I did believe in God and heaven, but I was terrified of dying. So I obviously didn't believe enough not to be frightened. I'm certainly not frightened of dying now. High Church of England and Catholic or Anglican are the same. Okay, low church, just variations, but we're talking the same language.
Yeah.
So, you know, you should be able to understand what I'm saying. I hear what you're saying, but I do believe that the Bible was handed, was, I don't like channeled, but given through a person from God. It came from God, the scriptures. That's the Old Testament. The New Testament is witnesses that recorded what Jesus said and did, miracles that no human could perform. Now, I might have brought a man back to life in ICU, but I didn't do it. It was only done through me from God. But we're talking half an hour. Okay, Jesus was dead for 3 days. That's never happened at any other time in history. So that tells me he's not human. Okay, so, and he had all these mates, all these friends that were witnesses. Now, the argument is I've heard people say it was written a long time after his life. Well, it wasn't. The youngest mate, disciple I was going to say, but his youngest friend wrote it when he was in his 80s. So my father is now in his 80s. He's got the best memory of anybody I've ever seen. So he remembers
every
detail.
Was that Peter that wrote it? I think it might have been. Was that Peter?
Yeah. And then all the others wrote it very quick, very shortly afterwards. So the Old Testament is historical and important, and that's the same as the Jewish, well, we call it the Bible, but the Jewish beliefs are the Old Testament. The New Testament is Jesus' life, and it's witnesses and stories and letters that were well documented. There might be a letter from Paul to the Corinthians. I like that one because it talks about love. And Paul was just one of Jesus' mates, basically, and he was going to go and visit someone, you know, some people in Corinth, and he wrote ahead to say he was coming to see them. So that letter was written at the time. Okay. And then, you know, if we were in a court here now and Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, just if we only use those four, stood in a courtroom and said, I saw Peter do, great name, this and this, and they all told the same story, the court would say, well, four witnesses telling the same story, it happened. We accept that as truth because there's witnesses. Well, there's more witnesses than that in the Bible. I believe it. I believe it more strongly. Noah's Ark, for example, that's in the Old Testament. But, you know, we all know there's many other documents of the flood times in recorded history. So, and they've found Noah's Ark, so in the Ararat Mountains. So I'll talk about that because I actually know the professor that really found it before the one on the internet that he took to court, said he took it. So I've seen photographs and evidence and, again, no names, but, you know, he found Noah's Ark. He was kidnapped, so you can check this out, and held as a prisoner in Turkey because he found it. So Noah's Ark exists. So that's not just a story, is it? Now that we've found petrified animal poop and boats that measure exactly what it says in the Bible. So there is proof. We've got the Turin Shroud. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Shroud of Turin, where the radiation going through it, that basically put a negative on the sheet, came through, yeah.
Now, if you had wounds on your face and I stuck a sheet on it, there's no way your face, like a photograph, would come out. It'd just be a bloody mess. So, you know, we've got proof. Now, a priest said to me not very long ago, stood up in a Catholic church and said, all these arguments on the internet about DNA and aliens. Now, he hadn't spoken to me, so obviously he's reading things too. He said, they've tested the DNA of Jesus and he has mitochondrial DNA, so he has his mother. He has Mary, he has the egg. But there is no paternal DNA. There is no father. It's not alien. It's not human. Can only be God. Now, you're talking to someone who believes in aliens, you know, and hybrid children and all of these things. So if you want scientific proof, it's there. If you want historical fact, it's there. Just do your homework. Now, whether you believe it or not, the truth doesn't require belief to remain true. So you don't have to believe it, and it's still true.
Yeah.
So I do believe that, and as you said, did it change my faith? You bet. You bet. It's, before I believed it, now I know it because I've seen it.
Well, they're two big things, aren't they?
Beg your pardon?
They're two big things, aren't they? And they're completely different. And this is where I've said to a lot of people, I don't...
No.
I don't, yeah. I don't believe anymore. I know what I know, and that's...
Because you've seen things.
Well, that's the thing, and a lot of people haven't, and I think that's the problem with society is that they go on a belief system. They don't know. They blindly believe and follow the blind because of something they're told. And this is where I hope, whether they agree with yourself or my story or whatever, because we're just telling what we've experienced. That's up for them, but it can help people go down, you know, connect the dots in whatever way.
And question, and do homework, and if you really do need proof, there's proof there. No, I'm not the only person that's been into heaven and come back. In emergency departments, I've seen a lot of death, as you can imagine, and I also see a spirit leave a body. And I have always, since I was a first-year nursing student, that's before I saw heaven, could tell you if someone was going to die. It got my second ward, it was ward 12 because they didn't have a ward 13 because it was superstitious in those days. Anyway, so... 13 shifts in a row, there were 13 deaths on my shift. Great.
What were you doing?
Yeah. Not one of them was for resus. It was the old alcoholics ward, and they were all in liver failure, and they couldn't be resuscitated. But nevertheless, it was my shift every time. And I might not have done consecutive shifts. I would have had days off in the middle. And it got to the point where the whole hospital said, Jane's coming, someone will die tonight. And I walk in and hand over and go, that one. And never miss. So I've always had a bit of an affinity with dead people. And I see the spirit leave the body. So it doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what you did. You still have a spirit. So you can think, like Packer said, there was nothing there when he died. Well, I think he just didn't leave his body. Because I've heard that's nothing. You just stay there and you're unconscious. But I've had patients tell me about hell. I've had patients tell me about heaven. I've had patients tell me about walking somewhere else in their spirit and then coming back. And I've seen their spirit leave their body, so it matches what they're telling me. You know, thousands for me, but, you know, there's got to be an awful lot more out there.
Yeah. Mm. Now, definitely, there's a lot of people that have experienced what you're experienced. What's been your interactions with the angelic realm?
Okay, well, there's only two times where I felt I've really seen them. They were certainly there in heaven, and I often feel them around me. That's different. Once I was in a church on Christmas Day, and everyone was singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and somebody in my head said, look up, And the whole ceiling was covered in angels that looked like a cross between a river running over rocks and flames. But it was beautiful. It was made of light, gold light, and they were faces and wings. Absolutely beautiful. And I'm looking up, looking around me, thinking, can anyone else see this? No. But I was told to look up. The other time, my own, well, I think I'll say this, my own child had a brain tumour, and two things happened. An angel appeared in front of me when I was having lunch with a girlfriend in her house, and she could hear him, she was psychic too, and I could see him. So she's telling me what he's saying, and I'm describing what I'm seeing. Now, he filled the room, and it so beautiful, definitely made of light, definitely big enough that you could call it wings. You know, I wouldn't draw it as wings, but great big gold light. And a booming voice, according to my friend. Now, at one point, I'm going, oh, her name's Chris. Chris, look, she's so beautiful. He's just so beautiful. And she's going, he's speaking through her, and he went, Jane, stop, listen, I've got something to tell you, because I'm just in awe of what I'm seeing. So I did actually stop, and he said, he, she, whatever, doesn't make a difference, kind of neutral. He said, your son will live. He has a special job to do. At that stage, I didn't know anything. My son wasn't even sick. So that frightened me. However, remember, there's another witness to that. Now, shortly after that, my grandfather also had died, and his ghost had hung around. Now, he was a very good man. Can't tell me he shouldn't have gone straight to heaven, but he didn't. And he kept haunting me, kept saying to me, this child has a brain tumour, and I didn't want to believe it until the last minute, when things got a bit desperate, and I went to the GP and said, look, I really care what you think of me about it now, but my dead grandfather says my son has a brain tumour and he has no symptoms. And the doctor's name is Michael, so no surname. He said, well, have you ever said anything like that to me before, Jane? I've known you for years, so okay, we'll scan him. Massive brain tumour, bled within days. If we hadn't known, he would have been dead. He was in ICU, unconscious. So between my dead grand, and everyone said to me, he's going to die. It's inoperable. It's bled. He's going to die. And I'm like a mother in denial, refusing to let go of my child. He's not going to die because Gabriel told me he's not going to die. This point didn't care what anybody thought. I just want my child to live. So all my friends know this story. And against the doctor's prognosis, and after being told it was inoperable, he had to operate because it bled too much and he would have died straight away, so it was a risk. He lived, and he's pretty good. He's pretty good. That was now quite a few years ago. So Papa warned me that my son had a brain tumour and that saved his life, and the angel Gabriel had already told me before it all happened that he would live because he had a special job to do. Now, the special job is his daughter, and she has her own story. So it just, my whole life has been like this. How could I possibly not believe?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, it's, you've kept quiet about it for some time till now. How's it been? Not to your friends. How's it been, the reaction public-wise?
Amazing. Oh, and I was quite frightened. Yeah, all of my good girlfriends know, and platonic male friends. I told my family that I had near death, that I saw heaven, and that Papa's ghost hung around. None of them believe it. Not my problem. But all of my friends believe it. Now, since this, and I've done a couple of other interviews now, I have had so many emails, private messages, people trying to Skype me, and all incredibly positive, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. You're making sense of it. What one woman said, you're a breath of fresh air. You're talking in a logical fashion that we can understand, you know, people from other planets, not interdimensional beings. Though interdimensional beings exist too, we've established that. I've had somebody on YouTube listen to your show and wrote about me. You'll find it. Did you see that note on Facebook?
Yeah, I saw it this morning, I think, or this afternoon. I haven't had a chance to check, like, do more looking into that yet, but yeah, I saw that message, yeah.
Never heard of this man, never met him. He's in another country, and suddenly he's talking on YouTube about this amazing woman in Australia, which just cracks me up. So the response has been worldwide. I've got another American interview next week. I'm not in this for anything. There is no money in it. I certainly don't. I'm very uncomfortable at being known. I like people. I'm friendly, but I'm not made for television. However, what I'm saying is so important. It's just gone worldwide. It's ridiculous in a positive way. I've only had two negative comments, but one of them was really a question about reincarnation, and it was very nicely done, and we had a lovely conversation at the end of it. He understood. And the other was a girlfriend, so I'm fine. Friends can constructively criticise, but we're still friends. Who didn't believe in God anyway? So I can't make someone believe in God, and I don't need to do that. That's not my job.
Yeah, well, it comes with the territory. It does. Like, a lot of people think Pete's gone Orion and he's lost the plot. So I'm pretty cool with that because I've attracted into my life those which, you know, are my true family. But this is what happens when you start to walk with what you can't deny. You attract those that aren't like-minded and a crappy surrounding when you're not walking in who you are and accepting who you are. So, you know, and it's a lot to get with the program when that happens. You know what it's like. If you are, you know, there's people that want to ridicule you, but then there's a point you've got to say, stuff it.
But there's not many. I you know, here was I talking to you last week, expecting to be ridiculed. I have not been ridiculed, not even once. You know, one woman, I don't believe in God. Okay, that's not my problem. Another one. But I don't understand. Please explain. Very nice conversation. I don't think I've got anything to complain about if that's all I've got. I gave a talk in Sydney. One person said, oh, that's not the Greys. They're not like that. One, you know, out of probably 100.
Yeah.
So I've had very little, I've had no ridicule, and I have very little opposition, which shocks me to pieces. Because of course we have.
Is there anything you wanted to go into that you haven't yet in terms of, or like something you wish you spoke about in the last interview to elaborate more on or anything?
I have a lot more stories, but they're going to be in my book.
Yeah.
And to start them now would take a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, so I had, how much time have we got left?
We got about 10 minutes, just under.
All right, well, I'll just give you one story then. Okay, so this particular, this one, I was with Graham and suddenly I was in a big room that was clearly a meeting. I call it the council. I call them the Parliament of Owls because, you know, my sense of humour already. And it was a round table in two halves, like two horseshoes with a gap each end.
Yeah.
And there were about 30 people around that. Now, the table was just strips of metal floating, and they were perched on benches that were floating, so there were no legs. And then at the head of the circle, but higher than the others, was another bench seat, and this one had arms, but the arms weren't attached either. Sitting on that was a man I can only call Grand Poobah, who had big eyebrows like an owl, so that's why I've called him the owl. I could tell straight away that I was somewhere important. But because I was with Graham, I felt quite safe. So Graham and I walk into the centre of the circle and Grand Poobah calls me up and he looks at me and says, well, who are you? And then suddenly on his face dawns that some sort of recognition. I don't recognise him, but he recognises me. And he says, ah, little one, not so little anymore, I see. So he had seen me as a baby with Graham. So, now let me see. He looked like a human, but he was quite stocky, big shoulders, quite short, browny grey green colour, but still skin. He had hair and eyebrows, big grey things that needed some scissors. And I was thinking all these things, and all he could do was burst out laughing because I forgot the room was telepathic. Also, there was noise in this room. I told you when I went to the mothership, there was no noise. Well, these were people, because there were also about 200 in the room, not just sitting in this circle, right? And they were all different from all different planets. And there are a lot more planets out there with life on it than we know about. And there were aliens I've never heard anybody describe before. One of them kind of looked like a possum, with a little chin, looked like a grey, so I understand if he was mistaken for a grey, but it wasn't quite the same one. So you used to get out there more than one grey race, could be. Had a little nose, still had the big eyes, but they were more round to the side than the greys. Do you ever look at a person and think of them as a caricature?
Can you repeat that again?
Is that not something that normal people do? Do you ever look at people and think of them as a caricature, like a cartoon?
I do with some. Yeah, so it, I can.
Yeah. Normal do, is it? Well, anyway, I do. I have this weird sense of humour. So this alien looks like a possum, and Grand Poobah looked like an owl. And then there was another one that looked more like a pug dog or a bulldog, you know? They all look human like, but I was giving them so that I could describe. Animal characters in my head. But everyone in the room was humanoid, and the interesting thing is there wasn't one reptilian in there, I think. Anyway, you've frozen. Are you still there?
Yeah, I was still here. You just, yeah, hello? Just a bad connection for a sec. I'm still here.
Yeah. Okay, so Grand Poobah said to me, they do, we talked about thought projections, and he showed me, first of all, a picture that was a thought projection from his head to mine that other people couldn't see. Me as a child, climbing up on his lap, pulling at his eyebrows, trying to make them straight. And I remember, since you showed me, I went, I remember, I do remember climbing up. And I instantly felt like I wanted to go and hug him. You know how you might meet an old person as an adult that you met as a child but you didn't remember?
Yeah.
It was like that. And he said, well, you came with Graham on one of your visits and I remember you. And then I was asked to go around the room and shake hands with just the 30, not the 200, that were in this circle. And every one of them called me Little One. They refused to call me Jane. They would not listen that wasn't my name. Little One. Hello, Little One. And most of them spoke, as well as telepathy. They had audible speech. So clearly some aliens are telepathic. Some still have a voice box like we do. And they didn't shake hands. They clasped hands. And every hand that I held, I got a flash of their personality and what they wanted to say to me and how they felt. They're all very good people and they're all very warm and loving. So they made me feel welcome and I realised that I was really privileged to be in the room. So just because we haven't got much time, then Graham showed me a hologram. So this is thought projection, but not from his head, but everyone could see this. And it was the end of our world. And what happened was not definite. But they've been waiting for it for quite some time. So last time I mentioned there's an emergency plan in place. So, well, he says that they're waiting for someone. There is a nuclear bomb, and I checked with a physicist that says it's possible, that could blow up the entire world. Basically, it blows, somebody presses the button on the computer, and it is a catalyst for a chain of events like tsunamis and earthquakes and volcanoes. It just blows everything up. And that's when, as I mentioned to you, all these ambulance spaceships cut swooping in trying to rescue humans. So he showed me all of this in great detail. I was standing there crying at what I was seeing. And he was then showing me the emergency plan. So he said that this council, although it deals with issues all over the universe, at the moment this is its highest priority. Earth is, and I know I'm not anyone saying this, very close to self-destruction. They won't interfere. There is a race of people that would be quite happy for us to do that because their planet is already radioactive and they live underground, so they don't care. It'll just give them another planet if we annihilate ourselves. But there's also, they've got another planet ready for whoever they can save to go and live on. So you want any more, you have to read my book.
So how far is the book from coming out?
Oh,
obviously it's done. You sort of just waiting on a few little bits in here and there just to make sure it's all fine-tuned?
Yes. You've got to do it and redo it and redo it and redo it and get it edited and get professionals to look at it. It's not going to be a very long book. I've got two versions. The first one I'm just going to put on Amazon. I'm doing myself. The second one, Hay House, I've showed an interest in and I hope to go with them, but that will cost me money. So I'm going to do the short version, release it to the UFO crowd for minimal cost, just printing basically, to get the story out there, and then I'll keep working on a novel. So it'll just be an account. So I guess it's done. It just needs to be refined. So before the end of the year, hopefully sooner.
So that's not too far away. Are you looking at getting a website or a blog or anything done, or are you just using Facebook as the main sort of...
Because I like talking. I've got all sorts of other things happening. Twitter accounts, I'm not using it. I like Facebook. I like talking to people. I like hearing other people's stories, not just mine. And I like people contacting me privately and having really interesting debates and discussions and questions and telling me their stuff. So Facebook works for me.
It is. It's a good format. And, you know, it's important that we all just let each other talk and we hear each other's stories, because this is where, you know, we're trying to manifest a oneness type situation here. And we can't do that about everyone saying, I'm right and you're wrong. And this is where it's been a great dialogue talking with you. And we just tell it like it is. And people just do with it what they may, because unless they've had our experiences again, people just aren't going to get a lot of what we're going to say, or some of it may fit into their piece of the jigsaw puzzle. And I think everyone's got that little piece in there.
Well, that's okay. It's okay. Take what you need. I've heard you speak as well, and you know, you had the same sort of attitude. I am not here to change your beliefs, but I believe what I'm saying to be true.
Yeah, and that's you know, that's all we can ask, is just people tell their truth. Yeah, and that's it. But we'll wrap it up there, Jane. I'm gonna have to get you back on sometime. I'm sorry that I've got a bit of a cold thing going on at the moment, but it's interesting to go into some other areas of this that, you know, you've said things that I haven't heard before, or takes on things, and these are your experiences, and I honour your reality and what you're saying. And again, it takes a lot of guts to come forward, and I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. And they really are only snippets of a much bigger picture. And it's very easy, if you haven't got the whole picture, to misunderstand too. But clearly in this amount of time, I can't tell you everything. Yeah. But, you know, really, I thank you. It's just great, and I'd love to come again. And I'm much more comfortable this time than last time, aren't I?
All good, yeah. No, it's good. You did great last time as well. But we'll stay in touch, and again, thank you very much, Jane Pooley.
Thank you, Peter. Okay.